Download Gundelio for free today and start saving money. Get alerts to hot deals by walking into a gun store. Plus, offers, new products, and videos sent straight to your smartphone. Get your gear for less. Gundelio.com.
Well, all right, it's Ben Willett. I haven't talked with you since last year. Yeah, I know. Grade school jokes. Hey, welcome again. Tom Gresham. It is Gun Talk. We're going to be talking about guns and what's coming in 2021. A lot of things going on. The landscape has changed. Certainly in the political world, we're looking at a whole different deal. It's also changed in a legal sense because we have a different Supreme Court than we had last year. What's all that going to mean? Well, we're going to talk about some of that. We're also going to talk a bit about things that you can do, maybe things you should do. Not up to me to tell you that. We also have another example of what people call FUDs. A gunsmith who was interviewed talked about how he doesn't work on assault weapons because he doesn't think people need those. And the interesting online reaction to that, and I think you may end up being surprised where I come down on that. It's certainly, I'm not coming down on him. Also, we'll be talking a good bit just about where you want to go this year in your shooting, new guns, new techniques, new classes, new everything. And also, maybe, just maybe, a renewed determination to be a part of the solution when it comes to pushing for and supporting gun rights and what can each individual do. Because that's ultimately, you know, that's really all there is. There is no them. There is no they should do this. They should take care of that problem. They should file a lawsuit. They should pass a law. There's just two people. There's you, there's me. That's all there is. It's just the individuals out here. And then the question becomes, when you look at that person in the mirror, what are you, guy in the mirror, gal in the mirror, what are you doing for gun rights this year? We're certainly going to be talking about that as well as we go forward. We have 3 hours plus of gun talk coming up. One of the things that just happened, and it's the weirdest thing. You know, the last time we talked, we took a week off for Christmas. We were talking about the ATF's letter about stabilizing braces on AR-15s. And their 14-day period, comment period, and it was terrible because it was only 14 days. It was over the Christmas holidays. What you may not have paid attention to was right after that show, during the Christmas holidays, they rescinded the comment period, shut down the comment period. They rescinded the letter. And we're all going, what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? What just happened? Well, maybe we can get some information here. Joining me is a guy who actually knows about things like that. Adam Crowd is the director of legal strategy for the Firearms Policy Coalition. Adam, thank you so much for being here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Tom. How are you?
Okay, so the question is, what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? What did the ATF just do?
Well, that's a good question. So as you kind of just recounted, the ATF had published a notice in the Federal Register saying that, you know, these are the factors that we use to evaluate firearms with stabilizing braces to determine whether or not they're regulated by the National Firearms Act or not. And specifically in that notice, they had also said that this is just guidance. It's not binding law. It doesn't change anything. And obviously, the gun community didn't really take too kindly to that. So there was a lot of pushback as far as the comments. And then kind of out of the blue, and you can read between the lines as to whether or not there were things in the background that were successful in kind of getting this, but they published on their website, which was later published in the Federal Register, a notice withdrawing that prior notice of guidance. And so a lot of people saw that and went, oh, okay, great, we're done, we won. It's no longer a problem. And we at FPC have looked at that, and we're not so sure that's necessarily the case.
Okay, well, certainly the guidance that they put forward was no guidance at all. What it said was things like, we're going to judge this on the basis of length or weight, but we're not going to tell you what the length is or what the weight is. We're going to judge it on the basis of maybe what optics are on it or what the caliber is. But we're not going to tell you what the criteria actually are. These are just the broad areas. You're just going to have to do it and find out if you're legal or not. That's not guidance at all. And I think maybe some of the industry went back to him and said, guys, you're not helping at all. This doesn't help us figure out how, those of us who actually want to comply with the law, we need something more than that. But what I hear you saying, Adam, is that for those who said, oh, good, we won, it's over. And you're saying, wait just a minute, guys. And I've read some of the things that FPC's put out. There's a lot of details here to take in. What are you looking at?
Sure. So, I mean, to your point as to the guidance, you're absolutely right. It wasn't much guidance at all. It was very subjective. And of course, you know, if it's subjective, it doesn't allow a reasonable, rational person to look at it and say, okay, well, what do I have here? But more importantly, when we're looking at the guidance and the subsequent withdrawal on it, you noticed that one of the things that they were saying there was that those factors in the guidance, they were things that they consider. They're not even saying future tense that we would consider it. This is what they're actively doing. And then again, when you look at the withdrawal of the guidance, you're seeing that it's so that they can consult further with DOJ, and that raises some very important questions because seemingly we are going to have a new administration here in 17 days, and if that administration is a Biden administration that is now getting into the discussion here, if they're not already involved, or if there's not holdovers from the prior DOJ that are involved with it, you may get a very different result. And so there was a lot of questions as to whether or not this was perhaps an attempt to preempt some kind of negative action by a Biden DOJ or not. But as of right now, it's now up in limbo, and there's nothing that would stop the new administration from, potentially going back and strengthening the guidance or alternatively entering into rulemaking, which would then implicate, a regulation, which does carry the weight of, law when you're talking about criminal violations. It becomes very problematic.
I mean, to be very specific about it, they can put forth a regulation that can put you in federal penitentiary.
Yeah, exactly. It would be no different than how the Trump administration looked at bump stocks and redefined the definition of machine gun to incorporate that.
Exactly that. The fine points, and you mentioned this, and I don't want people to miss what you just said. The way this was worded, the way the guidance letter was worded, and this is written by lawyers who are very specific, and they're very careful about their wording. It didn't say these are the criteria we will be using. It said these are the criteria that we use. In other words, whether or not this guidance letter is out there, what we're probably seeing is this is actually what they're doing now, regardless of whether the comment period is open or anything else.
Correct. And when this was first published, the criteria that was spelled out wasn't necessarily a surprise to myself and a number of others. And through some prior criminal prosecutions and through some FOIA requests and, the subsequent documents that came out of that, these were all things that if you were paying attention and you knew where to look, you could kind of already see that this was where they were going with a lot of things. So, and again, if you looked at the notice, they were just more or less saying, like, hey, we're just kind of letting you know what we're doing here, and we'll allow you to comment because we understand that a lot of people are concerned about it. Not necessarily that your comments are going to have any impact and that we're going to change the way we do it.
We don't care what you say. We're just letting you say something.
And again, they were already saying that this is what we're using, not right. What we plan to use. So, right. Whether or not this guidance is still published or not, I think, based on past actions from the agency, it's fairly clear that this is what they're doing. And I don't suspect just because they published and then subsequently withdrew a guidance that they're just going to abandon using that criteria internally.
Exactly. Adam, hold on a second here. I need to take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to talk a little bit about where we're going in the year 2021 with this, with our different and new Supreme Court, and basically who is in the forefront of fighting for gun rights. We're talking with Adam Kraut. He is the Director of Legal Strategy for the Firearms Policy Coalition. If you'd like to be a part of this, 866-TALK-GUN. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
It's back, the Smith & Wesson 10mm revolver. Yes, the Model 610 is back in 4 and 6.5-inch barrels. Six-shot moon clips full of powerful 10mm rounds. Plus, you can shoot 40 S&W ammo in it, too. Stainless steel, black synthetic finger groove grips, interchangeable front sight with an adjustable rear sight. Take it to 10 with the Model 610 revolver. Visit smith-wesson.com.
Attention, mountain and western big game hunters. Experience Sheep Week, January 11th through 16th, virtually. Seminars, auctions, and hundreds of exhibits, plus chances to win a sheep or other big game hunt, 17 in all, including a drawing for a Sonoran Desert Bighorn hunt for all registered attendees. Funds raised support the Wild Sheep Foundation and its purpose of putting and keeping wild sheep on the mountain. Sign up today at sheepweek.org.
Perhaps more than any other landscape, wetlands embody the life-giving abundance that nature has to offer. And perhaps more than any other organization, Ducks Unlimited is working to ensure that our continent's wetlands not only survive, but thrive for generations well beyond this one. The time is now to band together. The time is now to rescue our wetlands.
For more than 70 years, Timney Triggers has been enhancing the shooter's experience. Whether it's a local competition, a day at the range, or even the hunt of a lifetime, setting the standard in aftermarket triggers, Timney is now producing more than 170 models of triggers for bolt-action rifles, shotguns, AR rifles, and semi-automatic rifles. Proudly made in the USA since 1946. Find your new trigger at TimneyTriggers.com.
Back with you, Tom Gresham. It's Gun Talk, 866-TALK-GUN, or you can call me at Tom Talk Gun. Easier for me to remember it that way anyway. We're talking with Adam Kraut. He's with the Firearms Policy Coalition, which is a, I would say, relatively new gun rights group, but a very effective one, particularly working in the legal side of things, Adam. And it seems to me that that's where the action is, not only has been taking place, but even more so in the future, that's where we're going to be winning, I think. At least it has the most promising ground.
I think that's probably a fair assessment of it. Obviously, you know, anything that is as far as passing or rescinding laws, you need either the legislature, the state legislature, or, you know, the federal legislature to do something. And I'm not really sure of any instances where they usually repeal laws right once they're in place. And, you know, passing it has been, it's been hit or miss. We've seen some very good pro-gun laws passed in recent years, and we've seen some terrible anti-gun ones. And, you know, it's a very divisive topic where I think a lot of politicians are concerned about the blowback from, you know, either side of the wind on that one, which is why I think, you know, some extent it's going to be slower to see actual legislation. But the legal side certainly is where a lot of things are taking place for sure.
Well, to that point, and people say, well, you know, they passed the assault weapons ban before. You know, and we can recover if they do that again. And I try to tell them, look, they had the sunset provision in it before. They'll never do that again. And after, if they should pass some kind of a ban on so-called assault weapons, they would never vote to repeal it or rescind it because no politician's going to stand up and be in favor of it. And so that, for me, means that the real work right now is in the courts where if we can take it, and I know FPC has worked on this hard, if we can take it all the way to the Supreme Court and get them to rule that, yes, a semi-automatic firearm is covered by the Second Amendment and you cannot ban it, then that, I think, hope, that takes care of the problem, does it not?
In theory, it would. There's been two problems we've been experiencing, and I think to some extent the bigger problem lies in the test that the lower courts have been applying. Ever since Heller, you know, where Heller... certainly our interpretation of the way Heller said was that when you look at Second Amendment stuff, it's the text of the Second Amendment as informed by history and tradition, the end. When you look at the lower courts, mm-hmm. almost all of the lower courts, with the exception, well, at the appellate level anyway, with the exception of one, have developed this two-step test. And that test essentially is, does the conduct burden a right protected under the Second Amendment? If the answer to that question is yes, then we look at what level of scrutiny gets applied. And when we're talking about scrutiny, there's three different levels, strict being the highest, rational basis the lowest, which Heller said isn't even on the table. And then you have intermediate scrutiny, which is still supposed to be the burden should still substantially be on the government, but unfortunately it's gotten watered down, particularly in the Second Amendment context, to the point where it really isn't. And because the lower courts have screwed up the test that should be applied, a lot of these laws, particularly, in relation to assault weapons, for instance, have been upheld. You look at the Fourth Circuit, you look at the Ninth Circuit, the Second Circuit, where these laws are coming from, and they've all universally said that these are okay under intermediate scrutiny. Now, if the Supreme Court were either to take a case about assault weapons and either say on the merits that, these firearms in particular are protected, great, that gets you the answer you're looking for. Alternatively, if they said, we're just going to tell you that you're doing the test wrong, we're not going to make a decision on the merits and send it back for the courts to look at it through a different lens of a higher burden on the government, I suspect you would probably get the same result as well, that being that the courts would have to find these are constitutionally protected.
How does it change the landscape with Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court?
Well, that's a good question. As you and probably all of your listeners are keenly aware, since Kitano would be like really the last Second Amendment-related thing that looked at electronic stun guns and found that they're in common use and that they are constitutionally protected, with the addition of Amy Coney Barrett, there is a hope amongst the gun rights community that there is now an additional vote to A, grant cert, so the court will actually hear something, and also then that vote is one that would rule in favor of any of these cases that are now sitting there waiting for a cert grant.
So as you, and I know that you guys, the lawyers who are working on this, you work on many different levels, and you're kind of, I don't know if you start at the lower level and work your way to the Supreme Court, or you think in terms of what do we need to get to the Supreme Court, and then you start your way all the way back and start filing those cases. But I know that you have some that you're wanting to get to the Supreme Court. That's kind of the whole idea, because unless it gets there, as you say, these lower courts keep giving us these, what I would call bogus or erroneous rulings.
Yeah, so right now FTC actually has two cases that are that cert petitions were filed on that were waiting to briefing to conclude on before the court will either vote to hear them or not vote to hear them or potentially take some other form of action. So we have two that are currently sitting there. One is Holloway and the other is Salajitar. They're both Second Amendment as applied challenges. Which, if you looked at Amy Coney Barrett's response to the Senate questionnaire, the Cantor case that your listeners may be familiar with, those both strike right at the heart of that exact issue that she listed as the most important decision she wrote at the Seventh Circuit. And then we have a number of cases that we've been filing around the country on different issues, dealing with carry, 18 to 20, assault weapons, with the intent, obviously, to push those up to the appellate level, hopefully for review by the Supreme Court.
And I know that FBC works hand-in-hand with the Second Amendment Foundation on a lot of these cases. How does that work? Is that just a sharing of expenses?
It's a group effort. We have a good working relationship with the Second Amendment Foundation on a number of things. And how those cases come about vary from circumstance to circumstance. But it's a working relationship where we opt to work with one another on different issues.
Okay. I mean, both excellent groups and very effective groups. So we applaud what you're doing. I mean, I guess the final question would be for individuals who are saying, I want to be more involved in helping gun rights this year. And I always tell them, look, writing a check, I don't care if it's writing a $20 check a month to Firearms Policy Coalition or Second Amendment Foundation, but it takes money to do all this stuff. Is that one of the best things that people can do right now?
If you're looking to help with the legal effort, then yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, lawyers cost money. Litigating cases, a bunch of cases, is not an inexpensive venture. The one thing that we've always said at FPC and our attitude's always been that look at what we're doing. And if you like what we're doing, please donate to us. And if you don't like what we're doing, well, we hope we get there. You know, we've been very lucky and fortunate with the individuals who support FPC. They've been very generous. You know, even $25, $5, $10, it all goes to the work and helps fund it. So whatever people can do is, you know, always appreciated by us.
Very good. Adam Kraut, thank you so much for your help on this and everything you're doing. And if you would, please keep us posted on this, because it's just, it's a never-ending battle. I know you feel like you're playing whack-a-mole half the time.
That's absolutely right. Thank you for having me, Tom.
You bet. You take care. Adam Kraut, Firearms Policy Coalition. It's firearmspolicy.org if you want to look that up. Interesting situation. We're looking at 2021, and I've had several things happen in the last couple of days that I'm going to be talking about as we go forward, probably after this coming break. It's interesting how you will have two or three things happen within a period of a few hours or a few days, and they don't appear to be related. And then when you get a moment, you go, oh, wait a minute, there's probably something there. And believe it or not, I was out, strangely enough, shoveling snow. We have an overnight snowstorm up here in Idaho. I'm in my cabin up here. And I'm kind of coalescing a lot of these thoughts. I'm thinking about some youngsters who were out driving on the ice, and I'm watching the escapades of that. I'm thinking about some of the online comments I'm seeing from gun people, gun rights people, who are really more interested in making themselves look important online than actually doing any good. And then thinking in terms of what can we each of us do to simply make the situation better as we go forward? Because, I mean, we're going to be faced with a hugely, horribly anti-gun, anti-freedom administration. Of course, we've got the Georgia Senate races coming up in a couple of days. Vitally important, critically important. If you know anybody in Georgia, I mean anybody, you got to call them and say you have to get out and vote. And you got to support the Republicans. Got to keep some kind of control of the Senate. 866-TALK-GUN. Be right back with more Gun Talk. Back with you, Tom Gresham, 866-TALK-GUN. Yes, the show is called Gun Talk. If you've just discovered it, congratulations. We have a lot of fun around here. We really do. If there's a gun that you have questions about, well, we'll try to help you out. I don't know all the answers, but all of us put together, there's probably somebody who does. And I ask for help frequently around here. Some say I need help, but that's a whole different subject. We'll get into that later, perhaps. Our number again, 866-TALK-GUN. John's called in from Fargo, North Dakota. He's on one. Hey, John, what's on your mind, sir?
Afternoon, Tom. Well, I'll tell you, my height is chapped as usual. And, you know, you guys were talking about this in the first segment of the show. And here's where I sit as a gun owner. And here's where my annoyance is. My annoyance is with my brother and sister gun owners out there. My annoyance is with the people we elect to send to office who are all about the Second Amendment, except when it comes to being proactive. At best, some of them are weakly reactive after the, you know, horses leaving the barn, as they say. Mm-hmm. As Ben Franklin once said, we all shall hang together or we shall all hang separately. And that's what it boils down to in this fight. Now, we're going to know in a couple of days, you know, the outcome of the Georgia election. But I'll tell you what chaps me is all the Republicans out there that have been badgering me with texts because, you know, I signed up for a couple of...
I get the same ones. And we're not talking about one or two. We're talking about 20 or 30 a day. I know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Asking me for money, telling me how important this fight is for our Second Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. Where have you lushes been? You're sitting on your hands. You have not done anything to help me out in my eyes. You know, I gave up bump stocks this last round and got nothing in return, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's bugging me. It's just like all the people who hear me on the local stations up here, because I am very active on this subject, and say, God, John, you know what you said the other day? Man, that really made sense. Man, I'm all behind you. And I'm like, So where are you calling in? Where are you calling my legislators? Where, you know, right. My state, my local, my federal people? Where are you demanding action? Where are you demanding that someone stand up with us?
Yeah, I didn't see you when we had the hearings on gun bills at the legislature. Where were you? And people go, oh, well, you know, I have a job. You know what? Everybody has a job. Oh, I have things going on in my life. Everybody has things going on in your life. And so what you find out is it's either important to you or you're just jawing about it. And, John, your point is that most people are just jawing about it. It's not really important. They say, well, I'm a Second Amendment activist. No, you're not. If you're not literally standing there in the state legislature when they're hearing these bills, if you are not writing a check or putting a charge on your credit card for the gun rights groups, if you're not a member of, I would have to say, three minimum, six probably better gun rights groups, you're not there.
Well, that's it. And, you know, when I stand in our Fargo City Commission meeting over our FFL debacle here, where I'm not allowed to have one to make fair and legal and honest transfers of firearms because of a city ordinance passed 20 years ago, and I see 20, maybe 25 people who are on our side, and I'm not a great public speaker. I actually am kind of afraid of crowds somewhat. And I'll get up there and speak, and, you know, and maybe four or five others will speak. Where is 200, 300, 400? I'm at a gun range, Tom, that has almost 1,000 active members on the roster. Mm-hmm. 1,000 people should show up into that city commission room and pack it to the gills and give them all stink eye.
Yeah, you're right, John. And look, I appreciate you bringing it up because it actually lets me segue into where we want to go. And I thank you for the call, sir. And where I want to go with this, basically, where are you? Where were you? Why are we not seeing you? And let me just say this. Bitching about things through social media is not being effective. It's not doing anything that has an impact. And shouting down other people online is worse than being effective. It's divisive. And I'm sorry, it doesn't make you look important. It makes you look small and petty and ineffective and, dare I say it, pretty darn worthless in terms of actually getting anything done. I have some thoughts on that. Basically on being effective and what I think you and I both need to do as we move forward in this new year. I'll get to that on the backside. Quick break here. We'll be right back.
As arms makers for responsible citizens, Ruger wants to ensure that new firearm owners have access to the helpful information they need to operate, store, and train with their new firearm safely and responsibly. The new Firearm Owner Resource page features a Fundamentals of Firearms Ownership video series, resources for local training and safe storage, instruction manuals, and suggestions for safety equipment and shooting supplies. Discover more at Ruger.com/new firearm owner.
Mental health and guns. At Walk the Talk America, we're working with both the mental health community and the gun industry. Created by a gun industry veteran, Walk the Talk America seeks to raise awareness and create change through suicide prevention and firearm safety without legislation. We strive to eliminate the prejudice that firearms and mental health face. For more information and to support Walk the Talk America, please visit walkthetalkamerica.org.
When someone leaves you their gun collection, you may want a few, but what do you do with the rest? How do you sell them? Who do you call? Well, I call Johnny Dury at Dury's Guns. Whether you're selling one gun or 500, they'll tell you what it's worth and write you a check. Simple, quick, easy, fair. I trust Dury's Guns. Give them a call. Dury'sGuns.com. So 2 days ago, I'm watching a four-wheel drive pickup truck, big old tires, and it's pulling a big old trailer full of snowmobiles. And it's full of four or five young people, young being in their 20s. And they hit this hill not far from my little cabin here. They start going up this little hill, and all four tires are spinning. And they're pulling, they're trying to get this trailer up this hill. And finally, it just won't go anymore. It stopped. And he hits the brakes, and I'm looking, and all four tires are locked up. They're not moving, but he's going down the hill. He's going down the hill backwards with this trailer behind him, and it's pulling him down the hill. His answer to that is more power, more horsepower. Now the tires are actually smoking on ice. Finally, it slides down this little incline and across the road, and his trailer is blocking the entire highway. These guys all bail out. A friend of mine runs over there and says, "You guys got chains?" "No, they don't have chains." I was thinking about that. It's one of those things you just kind of ponder and go, that was interesting. In the exuberance and enthusiasm of youth and having only a small amount of experience in life, you think that what you have and what you do is all that's necessary. It's all that's needed. And because you have lots of horsepower and you were able to afford this, you think that's going to take care of you. And I thought about that in terms of gun owners. And a lot of other things we do as you get more experience. And there's more than one way to gain from experience. You don't have to have the experience yourself. This is a really important point here. You don't actually have to have the experience yourself to gain from the experience. That is, you can learn from the experience of other people. If you, for instance, listen to people who are older, says, you know, even though you have four-wheel drive, you're going to need chains. A four-wheel drive will only get you so far, and then it's going to spin. What if, in fact, you had chains? What if you had listened to somebody else who may have been here before, been in this part of the world, been through the snow, been through the ice, and understood that having a turbocharged, super-duper diesel, Hemi, Cummins, whatever it was, doesn't help you get up the hill if you don't have any way of getting traction? What does that have to do with guns, Tom? What in the world are you talking about? I'm thinking about all the people who went and got, they're carrying a gun, or they bought a gun for self-defense, or they got their concealed carry permit. And that's all they did. I am convinced in my heart that about 97, given the benefit of the doubt, 97% of the people who have guns for self-defense are not adequately trained as much as they should be. They're not nearly, and where I'm going with this is overconfidence. They're not nearly as prepared as they think they are. They have a huge, huge sense of overconfidence in what they can do. These young people with their four-wheel drive had all the confidence in the world. They had everything they needed until they found out they didn't. I came about this thought, I'm reading this story out of Augusta, Georgia. An Augusta barber, story reads, shot a man Saturday, said he was simply protecting himself. He says that they were in a bowling alley. They had an altercation, or I guess a little argument. And the fellow who had the gun, he has a concealed carry permit, he was there with his son, his 15-year-old autistic son, three other children, ages 12, 10, and 4. He had his mother-in-law, grandmother, and great-grandmother all there. I guess he got into a little thing with a guy, and this fellow, Murray, is the fellow's name. He says, I said, oh, it's okay, I'm not going to argue with you. He says, I tried to shake his hand several times. About 20 minutes later, as the Murray group was preparing to leave the center, the same group from outside ran up on their table. 11 guys were stomping all on me, Murray said. And I just happened to come out of it, and I got off one shot. The gunfire rang out loud, the story rings. He says, everybody ran. Everybody ran. So these two of the women had jumped on his mother, 59-year-old mother. It goes on and on, but fortunately the whole thing was captured on surveillance video. His mother says, "I just hate that all this happened, and it happened in front of my grandchildren." His 4-year-old daughter thought her father was dead. All the kids have been traumatized. As for the gun, she says, the concealed weapon may have saved her son's life. And this is the quote I want you to latch on to. Murray says, "This is why I take these classes and do the training. I will put it this way. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready." Think about that. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. He takes all these classes and does all this training. There's a study, a thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Basically, it says that people who are underqualified have too much confidence in their ability, and often people who are very qualified have not enough confidence in their ability. I remain convinced that most people who have guns for self-defense, because most people don't go take the classes that I talk about. I talk about it all the time here. And I don't care if you're going to Gunsight or Thunder Ranch or SIG Academy. I mean, go somewhere. But go somewhere often, once a year at an absolute minimum, to take real classes, not a concealed carry class, a real class, a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 day class. And then when you do that, you go, wow, there's a lot to this. I had no idea how much is involved in this. And until you do, you think, hey, I got my concealed carry permit. I got a gun. I got a holster. Well, it's actually really just like a sock. It's a terrible holster. It's a dangerous holster. But you don't know the difference. How can you know the difference? You haven't exposed yourself to other sources. You haven't exposed yourself to other people's experiences. That's what you do when you go to a class. You're allowing yourself to benefit from the experience of other people, people who have been in battle, people who have been cops, people who have been in gunfights, people who have carried guns for 30, 40, 50 years. What's your training? Oh, you watched Die Hard 47 times. Cool. Okay. Sorry. Not impressed, neither will anybody else be when you're fumbling around with your gun, trying to figure out what to do, and not recognizing the threat so that you can get out of the way in the first place, get away from it so you don't need your gun, which is a primary skill. I'm actually going to talk about that a good bit in the next hour with an expert at recognizing threats ahead of time and getting out of the situation so you don't have to use your superior gunfighting skills to take care of a situation you never should have got into in the first place. All of this to say, everybody, you know, about 90% of the people think that they're above average. I think maybe that's not mathematically possible. Chances are you may not be above average. And unfortunately, in this case, the average is very, very low on the skill set. This is a complicated subject. Self-defense with firearms is complicated. There's a lot to it. It's a fun thing to do. It's a fun thing to learn. The classes are really interesting. I know that you would profit from them. You would benefit from them. But it comes down to, what am I going to do? Where's my commitment level? Whether it's in gun rights, are you showing up where things are taking place? Do you belong to your state organization so you can even find out when the legislature is having hearings on gun bills? And on the personal defense side, what's your commitment level? Are you doing your research online on Facebook and different groups? Woe be unto you. 866-TALK-GUN. As you think about going into this year, what is your plan? So we're hearing that there are voters in Georgia, particularly those who would be voting for the Republicans, who are saying, I'm just not going to vote. This whole thing's fixed. It's rigged. There's no point in me voting. Do you realize you are being played? Do you not understand that you're standing up and shouting how important you are? Your self-importance is only preventing you from doing the right thing. And the Democrats who want to ban guns want you to not vote. They want you to be angry and to show the world how self-important you are, to stay home because this election is rigged. That's like the dumbest thing I've heard in a long time. And I've heard a lot of dumb things. Luis is actually right there in Marietta, Georgia, watching this whole thing go on. Luis, what are you hearing there with the Senate runoff? What's going on there?
Well, there's a lot of activity. Thank you also for your support via your platform, Tom, because this is making potentially a difference. We are trying to get everybody to vote. And I happen to be a member of the GeorgiaCarry.org state organization. We are really pro-Second Amendment over here.
Right.
And we are trying to use also our basically our organization to try to also get people to vote. But it is really what you just said is exactly a problem right now. If we give up right now, this is going to be a disaster. We just cannot do that. We need to engage. At the same time, though, I have to say, I am a legal immigrant from a country south of the border, and I have to tell you, we cannot also let go of the steal that just happened. We just cannot forget about that and pretend that nothing happened, because what happens is the fraud becomes more and more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Right now, there is all kind of mud tracks everywhere. You can see where these people, what they have done, and it's very clear. But if we let go and we just ignore what happened, the fraud is going to become a lot more sophisticated. Well, it's going to become...
I don't disagree with you at all. I think you're right. But I'm trying to focus on just the immediate thing. And 2 days from now, we're having this election right there in Georgia.
Yes, and I agree. We cannot forget about this. We need to assume that we are going to have a fair election. What I'm saying is, when it all is done, we still need to focus on the fraud that has happened. We just cannot forget about it. But right now, we need to get everybody to vote. It is critical because, by the way, that's one of the strategies of the left right now. Mm-hmm. Try to get everybody demoralized so that they forget about voting. So that their fraud is going to become easier if we really do that. If we just don't go and vote.
You said something I liked, Luis, which basically not voting right now is a surrender. It's saying, okay, we give up, you win, we're not even going to go vote. That's like the ultimate in surrender, is it not?
Absolutely, and that's part of their strategy. That's what they want us to do. They want us to just give up, and we just cannot let that go. We just cannot let them win at this point.
Right, right, exactly right. All right, real quickly, I hear you got a 1911 Nighthawk. I've got 30 seconds. Go fast.
Yes, I have a Nighthawk president. By the way, I name my guns, and this one is called the Donald. And it is a beauty. It is a joy to shoot. It is amazing how precision, the precision of these guns that Nighthawk Custom is producing. I don't know if you have any experience with them. But
I do. I've actually shot one of their Lady Hawks, which, I mean, even though it said Lady Hawk on it, it was a fabulous 9mm 1911. And look, I appreciate it, you bringing that up, because, yeah, the guys at Nighthawk are doing a fabulous job. I mean, they're not cheap, but, you know, the good stuff never is. And what do they say that, you know, buy once, cry once, buy the good stuff, and you'll have it forever. And I think that's certainly true with really high-end guns. Hey, when we come back, I want to talk about what's going on with civil unrest and what you can do to protect yourself and your family. We're talking about carrying the most powerful weapon possible coming right up.